Hi everyone, it's Allison here. Thank you so much for joining us, whether you are live listening to the recording, know that this is the perfect way to explore this piece for you. Okay, love, so we're gonna chat about some stuff that is not always the most popular subjects, but it actually is one of my favorite arenas to work. And primarily, we're doing this because, well, there's been a whole lot of work thrown your way in the past several months now about different tools, different ideas, different awarenesses. So today's focus is really on integration. And we're going to be integrating by simply exploring the dark piece to us, the shadow, what's hidden, and owning it. So there is a lot of different takes and ways to explore that. I'm going to run through basic information behind what that all means in case this concept is brand new to you, or even if it's not, you might hear something just phrased slightly different that gives you, pun intended, new light on the shadow. Okay. And then know that the last thing that we're going to get into is one of my favorite tools that I use. It's the Vibrant Transformation Release Method. And you have the notes for that on the page on the website for our group. So know that all the notes are already there for you. If you want, you're welcome to take a minute just to open that up right now. And I'm going to dive into just some basics here about the shadow. So I'm going to start with a quote by Carl Jung, and Carl Jung says, "How can I be substantial if I do not cast a shadow? I must have a dark side also if I am to be whole." And I love the way that he puts that. So I wanted to start off with that particular quote. We can't be selectively honoring our light side without also honoring the dark side. In fact, it dishonors the love and light side if we don't dive into the other half. So most of us are prone to going to great lengths to protect how it is we see ourselves, our self-image, from anything that's like unflattering or unknown, unfamiliar in some way. Because of that, it's often easier for us to see somebody else's shadows before acknowledging our own or being able to really see our own very clearly. In the same vein that it's always easiest to see somebody else's shit over our own. Okay. So what's in the shadow? Well, it's all that you're denying that exists in you. It's whatever you're perceiving as the parts of you that don't measure up. They're inferior, they're evil, they're unacceptable. Anything that's incompatible with how it is you think your attitudes are about yourself, like get relegated to this dark side. So anything that doesn't compute or honor usually the light side gets shoved here. So anything that we don't like, think of this as your disowned self. So the disowned self represents the part of us that we just no longer claim as us. And what's interesting is often it's easy to see how things that we measure up as inferior, unacceptable, evil, dark, is there. But also tucked away in the shadow is the positive qualities that we're not willing to see about ourselves. So anything that's unexamined or disowned pieces of our personality, well, they don't go anywhere. So we might deny that they're not here. We might try to cast them out. And I always use the analogy like there's a whole bunch of little yous locked away in cages, and you've thrown away the key saying, "I won't be back ever." Sit there and starve to death. So we don't actually get rid of anything. We've just locked up all the pieces in this like giant carry-on luggage that everywhere we go we have to lug around, even though we know we should never ever look in there. So all that we're repressing, all that's in our unconscious here, is not able to be eliminated, so to speak, because that would be like killing off half of you. And if you kill off the dark half, you also kill off the light half. We can't have one without the other. So it stays with us all the time. Trouble arises, conflict arises, issues arise when we fail to see our shadow. The joke is, the second you fail to see it, it's sure to be standing right behind you. So how this got created in the first place is that any traits associated with being good are accepted, and others that are bad are rejected, or others that just aren't you are rejected. And we all have our basic human needs, and those include physiological needs, safety, security needs, needs for belonging. And all of those needs are just really biological and instinctual. So all the basic things, and anything that within us is unaccepted or discouraged in your first couple decades of life, then basically get bundled up, swept out of you, outside of your conscious awareness, and get shoved into this shadow. Robert Bly is a poet, and he has a book. In A Little Book of the Human Shadow, he says that the child puts all of these unwanted parts into an invisible bag and drags it behind him. So this idea of the shadow is often thought of by Carl Jung as, while there is no light without shadow and no psychic wholeness without imperfection. So it's an essential part of us. There's a tremendous richness that's often referred to as the piece of us that offers our gold. So there's always gold hidden within the shadow. So there's no light without shadow and no psychic wholeness without imperfection. The ancient Greeks had a really cool perspective on this, and they said that you just have to understand the need to honor all the parts of the psyche. So the way that they did that is all the gods and goddesses were what they worshipped, and all the unknown pieces of their psyche, they just projected onto the gods and goddesses. So the Greeks say that, well, if you ignore a god or a goddess, that's certainly going to be the one who turns against you and destroys you. So any part that we disown within us turns against us. The personal shadow represents all of those disowned parts. And there's a lot of ammunition there to turn against us. And this is where all those, I don't understand why I'm never getting ahead, I'm just sabotaging myself, is coming from. So the shadow is actually fully capable of operating all on its own, and we don't even have to be aware. It just takes over. And it's like our conscious self just goes on autopilot while the unconscious assumes our control. So we do things that we wouldn't voluntarily do, and we might later regret. If we catch it at all, we might not even be aware of it to the point where it's that unconscious. We say things we wouldn't say. Our facial reactions express emotions, our body language does too, about things that we don't even consciously feel, that we can't even connect to. And when we're unconscious of all of this, you can easily see how it sets the stage for conflict in every vein, from relationships with friends, family, significant others, as well as how it can impact all of our professional relationships. And well, really your ability to be your best business person, your best leader in you. So when we repress that shadow, when we sweep it under the fridge and we say, okay, just hide there, you know, can't see you right now. Well, we end up denying that inner self, so we have to see it in others for it to become into our awareness. So in psychology, is what they refer to as a projection. We project onto others anything that is buried within us. For example, if you get really irritated because someone's rude to you, it's because you haven't owned, and owned is a key word to remember here, your own rudeness. Doesn't mean the person isn't being rude to you, but if the rudeness wasn't there inside of your shadow, the rudeness wouldn't bug you. So that process doesn't happen consciously. We're not aware that we're doing this in the moment, and how we get aware of it is usually in times of conflict. So the basic mechanism of all this is really that of defense. It's defending the self-image of how it is you're seeing you, and those false identities of being good keep us from being able to connect to that shadow. So even by simply embracing shadow work, there's this idea that we might be doing something wrong. And yet, how can we ever hope to be whole? How can you ever hope to integrate any awareness, any understanding, unless we embrace it on all levels? So you can certainly see how then projections would distort our reality. It's basically, I think of it as like creating this really thick layer of cement, or you can use whatever imagery works for you. It's like this massive boundary between how you're viewing yourselves and how we behave in reality. Again, I'm going to quote Carl Jung because he's, well, kind of like the godfather of this work. And he says, shadow work is the path of the heart warrior. So when we look at our shadow, it can't help but also open up the hearts. So we're going to start with a couple of different exercises to be able to connect to and explore the shadow. So we can talk about it all we want, but really it's the experience that carries some weight to it. Okay. So imagine that you can go inward with your attention and breathe here until your body begins to unwind, release, relax. Give yourself a few slow, deep breaths here. So here we're going to introduce the first method of exploring shadow self. There's a few. This is simply one of them. And even these few are a few of many, so this is not the complete body of work of how to talk to your shadow in an hour. There's a many, many lifetimes can be filled with that exploration. So in this first method, imagine here that you could invite in an image of your shadow. Using all five senses, what do you observe? Notice how this feels. What does it look like? Does it have a sound, a taste, a smell? Now, if you could talk to your shadow, what would it say? If you could imagine your shadow as a movie filled with villains or antagonists, like a tyrant, a manipulator, a trickster, a bully, someone who's really cold-hearted, a coward, whatever type of villain or antagonist comes to you to explore, imagine that you can see your shadow as this movie filled with all of these villains and antagonists. There's likely lots of pieces to the shadow. So it may not be obvious at first, but examine some of these characters more closely. I'll say them more slowly. And look to see if you can figure out what it is you haven't yet recognized in yourself. See yourself as in the shadow self as the tyrants. I'm just observing any sensory observations here. See yourself as in the shadow self, the manipulator. And again, if it had something to say, what would it say? How is it serving you? What's its role? What is its role in keeping you whole? Every piece of our shadow holds value. It's here to serve you in some way, shape, or form. And the answers might not be clear now, and that's okay. Continue to explore that in whatever way feels right for you. Now let's go on to imagine inside your shadow self. You can see yourself as the trickster. Is there any part of you that believes that you have to, strategically try to get your way? Or can you just be direct and ask for it? What are the games that you trick yourself into playing? If the trickster could talk, what would it say? How is it here to serve you? What about the bully? If you could see the bully inside of your shadow self, observing with all five senses, how does the bully support you? How does the bully serve, support you? What does the bully offer you of value? Now, inside the shadow self, see the cold-hearted person. What value does behaving cold-hearted offer? How does this serve you? Coward. See the coward inside the shadow self. How does the coward provide for you? And those are just a few to begin with. Know that there is a lot of other types of villains or antagonists or pieces of us that we don't recognize as ourselves that you're welcome to continue this exploration with. And I promise you, even though it doesn't seem so obvious at first, to examine that character, that mask, that archetypal energy, it has lots of names and identity work here. You'll begin to see what it is you haven't really truly recognized in yourself. So it may be helpful, especially if you find one that's pretty new, to write down the character and all of the attributes that you could identify, all the qualities, all the way that it provides for you, all that it offers you. Also interesting, if there's any of those characters that just irritate you, that you're like, no, I don't want to do this one. That's a pretty good sign that there's an element of something in your shadow to discover. So this is one way that you can play with the shadow as much as you like here. And just begin now to see all these different layers of the shadow that you've explored here begin to merge together. Imagine that you can see all of these characters coming together and that you could step right inside of them. Rather than resisting them, welcome them. Similar to the Sedona Method work we addressed earlier. Step right into feeling all of the energy that's here within your shadow course through your veins. Feel it down to the very core of your bones, inside of every cell. And just simply continue to observe that you can be all of these things that annoy you, that cause you conflict. You are these things. You always have been. And they all serve necessary value for you. So continue to honor them by feeling them. The second we push them away is the second the shit really hits the fan with them all. And that's simply another method that you can use to explore the shadow. Simply step into being those things that annoy you. Feel them right down to the very core of your body. And anything that really just causes you conflict, imagine you could step right inside of it and acknowledge it as something within you. You're welcoming it as being present within you. If there's something that pisses us off about anyone, no matter how heinous or how subtle that piss off is, there's something of value to explore there. Okay, now, this is actually a fun way to do this one. While you're merged with your shadow still, If you could write down your very best attributes, like what are the top five? You can do more if you like, but just for brevity's sake for this call, if you're listening to this live right now, write down your top five best attributes. So I may say something like for myself, I'm really driven. I'm successful, I'm disciplined, I'm committed, and I'm consistent. Okay. You find your top five. Write down your very best attributes about you. For every attribute that you've written down, know that this is just the one side of the coin. So, what would be the opposite? What's the other side of that coin? So, for example, if you wrote down disciplined, the opposite would be lazy. Usually, we're disciplined because we fear being lazy. We're organized because we fear chaos. We're driven and successful because we fear failure. Okay. We're consistent because we fear falling behind. So you do this for any attribute. There's always an opposite. It's not as powerful to search for what that opposite is on the internet according to like the dictionary as it is to explore for you what's your opposite. Because some words have a couple of different opposites. For example, love. The opposite of love for some people is hate, and for other people it's apathy. So some words have different opposites, even though that doesn't seem like it should be the case. This is the way it is in the individualized perception of all of these attributes. So if you could write down now the other side of the coin, what would it be for every one of the things that you wrote down? As you explore those, know that every time you find an opposite to one of those things that you really think is like your best thing, it gives you the opportunity to own the other side of this coin. When we can see both sides of the coin really clearly, we can get off the wheel of living our lives in this way that we're always trying to uphold this best version of ourselves and give ourselves a break. Yes, all those things are valuable. However, if they're controlling your life and creating other issues, then it's time to look at the other side of the coin and how this just might be a coping mechanism. How this just might be sabotaging you. So if you have successful written down and you're exploring the fear of failure here, well, anytime we come into that awareness, that we're trying desperately to be successful because we fear failure, then it creates the stage for inevitable conflict. You'll inevitably get to explore failure after failure, and at times success as well, just because it's got to be worth it. But there's this idea out there that things have to be harder and you have to experience more failure in order to have the success. So we're looking at bringing into awareness both sides of the coin to essentially like neutralize it in a sense. Just like in chemistry, when something was really acidic and you added something basic, you stuck them together and all of a sudden the pH became neutral. So that's a really easy way to do it, and especially in a time of conflict. So for example, If you have a conflict with, let's say, a friend or a partner about how lazy they are, and you pride yourself on never being lazy, then that might be a clue that you're using the opposite side of the coin, the discipline, as simply a form of coping to help you avoid any perception of possibly being seen as lazy by other people or by yourself for that matter. We overreact and play these games just for our own self-perception, never mind anybody else's. Okay, so that's another way that you can explore the shadow. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the sort of being the thing that annoys you, this is the opposite side of the coin to that one, no pun intended. This next one I call act as if. So act as if you already possess a quality that you admire or envy in others. Anytime we admire or envy something in other people, it's because we don't think we have it. And that's just is a surefire sign that it's locked away inside of our shadow. So we're looking here then to explore all the things that you admire or envy in others as if it's already something within you, because, well, it is. So at first, this means acting as if, but soon enough, it becomes the unfolding or the unveiling of those hidden powers, and they become accessible to us. So one of the ways that I play with this all the time is at the gym. I am so much in admiration of the people who are like lifting the weights that I'm like, I didn't even know the human body was capable of doing that. And they're busting world records and things like that. It's like, wow, our bodies are so powerful and strong. And then I think, okay, I can blow it away out of the water at the gym. And I go, and of course, because my muscles haven't been doing that for decades like theirs are, and my genetics aren't the same as theirs, the weight is different. So there is an interesting exploration that I have been playing with about I'm just going to act as if I already have that inner athlete. Now, the word athlete has been a huge trigger for me in the past. It actually took me until I was in my mid-30s, late-30s, to step foot inside of a gym because I hated this idea of, athlete. So I'd been, well, the smart kid, and I was not very coordinated. I was picked last in gym. I was mocked, etc., for my physical abilities. So stepping foot inside the gym every day was like facing the horror of unfamiliar territory, along with waiting to be mocked and judged for not measuring up, shouldn't be there, didn't deserve to be there. So I really had to own that inner athlete. So I imagine I am as if all those, the full gamut really of all the different like athletes that I will creep on Instagram are within me. And it makes the workout so much easier because I can feel the strength and the power and the connection. This is what we refer to as matrix work in Module 9 as being a part of inside me. And it's interesting when I do that, the workouts get easier. What I'm capable of lifting is much higher. And the days that I forget to do it, or the days where I'm just like, ugh, I just don't want to, are of course the days that don't go as well. So you don't have to do it in that way, but you can explore whatever it is that you admire and envy in others, and just simply act as if it's already within you. I also did this years ago when I watched John present Body Talk, and he presented it with such confidence and assuredness in his being, and I knew that that was the thing that the audience was feeding off of, and part of why he was getting such fantastic results. So I began to really explore and adopt that for my own self. And I spoke in the same sort of like authoritarian confidence that I saw John doing, and it revolutionized my results for starters. along with my practice of body talk, a breakthrough, as well as teaching body talk, breakthrough, free fall. So there was this air of being able to connect to, I am the inner expert that is inside of me, and I was able to act on that. And so this is a really fun way to begin to explore that shadow piece, and it's a little bit different from classic shadow work. So we don't usually step into admiring things that we, or step into the things that we admire or envy in others. And yet it's just as much a shadow as all the shit and abuse that we've piled on about our dark side there. Okay. All right. I've got one more to explore, but this one is in your notes, and I call it the Vibrant Transformation Release Method. So we're going to go into a bit more detail with that one. And just because I don't want to run out of time and I want to make sure that I'm answering all the questions that you guys had on the Facebook chat there, I'm going to do that first. Okay, so let me just scroll through here. Okay, so I'm going to start with Ava's questions. Ava's questions are, do you have a cancellation policy? Oh, this is, I had something pop up here. Hang on. Do you have a cancellation policy? And can you comment on how you deal with clients who cancel last minute or show up late over and over and over and over again from the sounds of things? Okay. And she says later on, I just had a no-show. I must be ripe for this lesson. I find 95% of people show up as agreed, and then the other 5% are repeat offenders. I have a cancellation policy, 48 hours notice, or 75% of the appointment fee due, but I've never charged anyone for appointments that they've missed. Okay, so you may have just answered your own question, Ava. If you're not following through on that, you're teaching people how to treat you. So you could actually have people pay you before they even step foot in the door and tell them, hey, your appointments are not confirmed until you pay. And only then will I tell you, only then will we find a time together that works for both of us. You pay first, then we'll find a time. So that would be a really easy thing to do. If that seems like a lot of work to do in advance, then you could just simply implement it for those people that you know are your no-shows. So it's a really easy way to uphold a boundary and to continue to honor yourself and your own needs here. As for myself, I've never had a cancellation policy for sessions, and I have for teaching, which is pretty rock solid. It's been developed over the years because I've gotten mostly the School of Hard Knocks as the way of refining that cancellation policy for students. For sessions, I've only had in about 15 years or so of practice, a handful of people at best that I've either no-showed or have shown up significantly late. If they no-show, which I think has only happened, honestly, a few times, and for the most part, it was like, okay, that's a really good sign that this just wasn't the right session, a combination of practitioner or client for this to work. And it typically happened at a time when I just needed a break. I had 12 people booked that day, and somebody just didn't show up, and it was like, okay, thank God. If people cancel last minute, I don't usually have a problem with that, and for the same reason, for that understanding. And again, that's only happened a handful of times as well for me. Usually people reschedule right away if they do have to cancel for some reason. So I'm not too butthurt about that because, hey, life happens, and I've definitely been in that boat. However, it's an issue when people are chronically doing that sort of thing or chronically showing up late. I have had, this is a lot of years ago now, a couple of people who would show up like over and over again late. So two things would happen. Either there would be like a little bit of time and they would just get a very short session and they'd still pay full price for it. Or we just wouldn't have time to do the session. And then you can choose if you'd like to enforce your cancellation policy of charging them. I didn't have a cancellation policy in place that my clients were all strictly aware of, so I didn't really enforce that. Because again, it wasn't a chronic ongoing issue. So that would be an easy way around it too. So they can still have their session, but hey, instead of, getting to be on the massage table for an hour, you're now down to 10 minutes. And yes, you're still paying full price. A session is a session is a session. And as well as that other suggestion of just have them pay beforehand. And you can implement that if you want, just for the people that are the chronic no-shows or are the chronic people that are always late. Also know that you have total power to fire any clients. So you might have, as well as part of your cancellation policy, if you cancel without any notice more than twice, then I refuse to work with you, or I reserve the right to refuse to work with you. So you can word that however you like. Again, it boils down to simply you gotta implement it. You gotta walk the talk, otherwise you get walked all over. Okie dokie. And when people know that you're walking your talk in that way, there tends to be, well, less of those experiences. Once the boundary is set, then you're not going to see as many no-shows or as many late people. Okay, so if that helps, great. Ava, if you want more, great. Let me know. Okay, Nancy, and I know you're live on the call with me, which is awesome. Thank you for being here live. Yay. A couple themes to explore. So one, what do you do when you're obsessed and you have to do a body talk session? Yeah, great question. So do you breathe, refocus? Absolutely, you can do that. If it's to the point where you're just unable to reground or reconnect, it's okay to reschedule if you have to. I have total empathy for this. I have had, it seems, the worst catastrophic events in my life happen to happen usually right before I'm about to go teach. I once taught a class after finding out that my husband was having an affair and I didn't have the option to cancel and not go and not teach. Not a lot of subs in this line of work. I've once taught a class where 15 minutes into the first bit on day one of fundamentals, I got a text from Dave saying that he had been let go from work and he had no phone anymore because the phone was a work phone and no way to really get a hold of me, but that he would be fine until I got home. And I was out of town teaching that course for 4 days. So that was a bit of a bitch to regroup from and quickly move on. So I have more experience than I would like. Those are just two out of many stories. I have so many stories to share about that. But they're not really so relevant. What's relevant is what do we do? So for me, my process typically involves that of healthy compartmentalization. And forgive me if I'm not remembering things accurately, but I believe I shared the story of last time, or maybe it was 2 sessions ago now, about how Esther kicked my ass when I said I was in the middle of a breakthrough and I was going to help this person doing this like heinous conflict in their life, and then they said the exact same story about having had their spouse have an affair that I had just gone through, and now here I was having to anchor them through a breakthrough. So I said, no, if you can't acknowledge that this is an overreaction on your part, then we'll just find something else. And I sort of like yanked the lifeline away. If for some reason I haven't already told that story, just remind me and I'll do a little video and put it on Facebook and elaborate even more there for y'all. But I'm pretty sure I've talked about that. So from that vein of understanding, I have very quickly then learned how to compartmentalize. And it's been a skill, I suppose, that I've been developing pre-breakthrough, pre-body talk. It probably goes actually all the way back to really childhood, if I wanted to track it back. And we all have it within us. It's a natural, healthy way for your masculine to help protect and provide for you. We all have our masculine nature that does that. And the role here is simply that of whatever it is that's going on for you, you can, there's lots of ways to do this. You can imagine it being in a box and just setting that box aside for right now, knowing that you can come back to that box as needed. You can do diaphragm chin test signs on yourself to support yourself in the middle of that. You can do quarter season switching. Excuse yourself, go to the washroom, give your client a couple minutes to relax on the table, and do what you need to do to get present. Treat it like client, pardon me, like practitioner permissions have come up as a priority. Do all the same things, courtesy, switching, diaphragm to intestines, breathe, feel your feet on the ground. All those are really useful. Having said that, I've always found the compartmentalization a really healthy skill to develop. And it's one that's not always incredibly natural to the feminine. So know that it has to happen through the masculine. The feminine is too diffuse and connected to everything to be able to do this well. So you can even imagine stepping right into your masculine nature and helping to get some space and helping to give yourself what it is you need in that way of, you know, let's put it in a box just for now, and then you're going to look at it again right after that session is done or as soon as you can get to it. So you're still doing the work for you. Odds are whatever you do for your client will also help to stabilize you. Typically when I'm in a state of like that nervous anxiety, tension, excuse me, the first 10-15 minutes of the session might be all about like EGBs or access type of techniques where we're just calming the system down. There might be lots of courtesy switching, diaphragm to intestines, brain drain, which is lymphatic circulation from within our nervous system that helps to support all of that. Okay, so does that help, Nancy, at all? Do you need more on that for that first part? Well, I don't know if you can hear me. Nancy, are you there? Does that help for that first part, or do you need more?
Yeah, I like kind of anchoring the masculine. I like that.
Yeah, so you can even take that a step further and imagine that you have like this whole wall of masculine energy at your back body here to help continue to protect and provide for you, which is the natural inclination of the masculine. Mm-hmm. I had, for a while there, I had in my Mindscape workshop, you could just use your imagination if you don't have Mindscape. I had somebody that would press a button in my back body anytime I was talking too much. So that was my cue to just shut the hell up and listen. So you can use that, you know, in whatever extent that you like. You could install a little trigger switch as well for your masculine body to literally help flip the switch when needed. So no shortage of creative options there to play with. Okay, so for the second one, and thanks for going back and forth with me with clarifying for this one, Nancy. So public speaking has been a recurrent theme recently in my life, confronting me to a heightened state of anxiety, fear, panic. If how we do one thing is how we do everything, can you expand about that? And then, for example, how can you explore that theme in the same way that you explored money and its associations? And you actually said that, yeah, I could do that. And I was like, okay, great, question answered. But to expand just a little bit more on that, know that when we're saying one thing, how we do one thing is how we do everything, it's looking at what's underlying it. So it's not like how we public speak is how we cross-country ski, is how we cook our food. But it could be in the sense of if we're inhibited in some way or if we have a fear of expressing ourselves fully, that'll also show up in expressing your body movements and how you cross-country ski. It'll show up in the choices of food that you decide to cook because you won't be as open. You'll be very inhibited. You might be like my mom, who I tease voraciously for having like Monday night was spaghetti night, Tuesday night was meatball night, Wednesday night was chicken night, etc. And it was rinse and repeat. And that was meals for the first couple decades of my life. So it was pretty stale and there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity to switch things up and explore. So that would be one form of how that inhibition could show up. So we're really looking at what's like the underlying roots of that. And what we know for sure, and in particular in doing the work that I see all the time with free fall, is when people tackle those things that have been obstacles in their life, then that has a ripple effect into many areas simultaneously, into their professional life, their business, into their relationships, into how does they interact socially with others, including things like public speaking. Okay. Yeah, so did we get there, Nancy? Do you have more on that?
Yeah, it feels I just wanted to like nail it down, but I don't think it's one thing. I think it's deep rooted. And yeah. And even earlier when you were talking about, you know, act as if you were already an athlete. Well, the first thing that came was like, well, act as if you're already a public speaker. And, you know, so I think it's a mix of different things for me.
I feel you. That's actually how I got through my fear of public speaking, was I acted as if. And I got through most of it on my own through just doing that. And I was the person who couldn't make eye contact. I hated like even the idea of having to make small talk with a cashier at the checkout for whatever I was buying, groceries or my prescription or whatever. And I wouldn't even do it on days that I didn't feel strong enough. So how I got through the big chunk of it, as I mentioned, was act as if. And then the last little bit, I went for a body talk session. We addressed some things. And it all related to how for the first couple of minutes, I would still be so, so nervous when I was speaking. And as you can appreciate with classes like body talk and free fall for that matter, there's a lot of start stop for talking. And every time I got to start talking again, I got that same set of nerves. And no matter how hard I tried to act as if, it just wasn't going anywhere. And we had to look at the underlying roots, which was an active memory. And I think I might have shared this story before, so forgive me if I'm repeating myself. But we had to do an active memory of how it is I was perceived at birth with my cleft lip and palate in those first couple minutes. So yes, things like public speaking, fears of any nature really can be multifactorial. They're usually sort of complex holdings of a bunch of things all simultaneously interlooped and interwired and entangled into our emotional brains. So often it's start with one tool, see where you get to. You might have to integrate another tool or a third tool or a fourth tool to unravel it all in layers and in pieces. Or you might just go for, you know, one hell of a free fall one class, and then you might be like, oh my God, that's amazing, and fear of public speaking, gone. So it can definitely happen that way. I won't set you up for it to be one specific way or another. But absolutely, these things tend to be more multifactorial than not. Anything else that I can help you out with while you're live on the call?
No. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, loves. So if you don't already have your handout in front of you, now's a great time to grab it. And I'm going to talk us through the Vibrant Transformation Release Method. And I had to call it something, so I called it that. The name might change, so know that it's me just putting pen to paper about things. So the recent name may not quite stick. That may evolve it a little bit. So this is a process that I use all the time for myself. It was designed... I use it for others too. So it's really designed to restore you back to your sense of self and your ability to receive. So if you feel shame when you violate your ethics, or there's a sense of that you've harmed others or yourself, this process is designed to release the shame by using it as a guide back to yourself. It also addresses what I refer to as what was the bane of my existence in all this work. which is the ever-pervasive belief of, I don't deserve blank. Anytime I was doing a breakthrough with somebody, or anytime I had to dig deeper, it's like, well, why is this happening? What's underneath that all for you? It usually went to some variation of the words of, I don't deserve this. And yes, observation is required for healing. However, sometimes we need a lot of observation before things release. And it just felt like we were stumbling all the time when we got to this. So this is a tool that can help get around this for people. So it's pretty damn powerful with just that alone of addressing the I don't deserve blank. So here's how we figure out what it is we think we deserve. So we judge what we deserve as all of the things that you've done that you judge as good, that you've caused, that you blame yourself for causing, that's the perception. And you weigh that against all the perceived or judged harm, again, that your perception is that you've caused and that you haven't yet owned. So basically, it's your light side minus the shadow side. And that's what we think we deserve. It boils down to just that. Light side minus, sorry for the math, the shadow side. And if the shadow side seems to outweigh the light side, then we don't think that we've deserved it. So this is about owning those pieces of the shadow, that this calculation of the good versus the bad, the light versus the dark, can shift. So when you have that courage to own the perception is that you judge something as harmful, that you've blamed yourself for causing, self-compassion can bubble up. And it's very heart opening. We talked earlier about Carl Jung saying this is the shadow work is the path of the heart warrior, is the exact wording. Okay. So this is why self-compassion begins to bubble up. And it sets the stage for all that needs to be released. And in turn, that opens up capacity to live more fully. Okay, so we may not actually get to a demo with this one today. It might be more helpful to actually demo this in a couple weeks because there's a bit of prep work. Okay? So know that the prep work is make a list of all the items that you'd like to address and to release. Nothing is too small or too big to be on this list. However, keep the list vague. So if there was like an actual crime that you committed and you tell somebody else about that in this process, then they are bound by law to have to report that. So, you know, I just did something that was really bad. Be vague. You don't have to be specific. This works just as well without going into the specifics. So what is it you feel bad or guilty about? Rather than saying, well, I shoplifted yesterday, you might say, I did something bad at the store yesterday. So keep it vague if necessary. You don't have to keep it vague, but if it's illegal, please do. If it's a crime, please do keep it vague. Okay. So... what are you ashamed of having done? Or what are you ashamed of having failed to do? You might continue to add to your list here with these remaining questions. How and when did you violate your own values, your own principles? This is a really juicy one. What are the reasons that you don't deserve what you need and wish for?
Can you repeat that?
Yeah. What are the reasons you don't deserve what you need and wish for? What are all the reasons that you don't deserve that? I wasn't a good enough daughter to get the love that I wanted, that I wished for. I'm not smart enough, so I don't deserve to have success in business. What are all the reasons that you don't deserve what you need? All the reasons you don't deserve what you wish for? Another way you can prep for this is by asking and exploring, from what areas of life have you removed yourself or limited your participation? So where have you shut down or numbed yourself out or coped or doped yourself up with because of a past failure that harmed other people? So where is it that you have harmed somebody in your perception and subsequently removed yourself or limited your participation? For example, you may have hurt an ex-boyfriend, and that might in turn be costing you the ability to move forward to find a satisfying relationship that meets your needs. You may have broken somebody's heart, and now you're afraid to share love again with another person. And you can continue to explore this in the vein of like, all the themes in your life, family. Perhaps if you're a parent, you could do this. If you're even like a fur baby parent, that works. That's just as valid. You could do this in the arena of friendships, of business, of money. Of community. So where is it in your life you've taken yourself out of the game? You said, nope, I shouldn't play. I just cause harm and damage to other people when I do play in this arena. And it might be another area of life that I haven't mentioned by all means. This is not the complete exhaustive list. This is just a few ideas to stoke the flame. Okay, so that's a really juicy list to begin to dive in and prepare and marinate in. And then the recommendation is for this method that whenever you experience a disconnect from yourself, you can practice it. So whenever you have a loss of power, a balance, a peace, whenever there's a conflict, whenever there's an overreaction, which is simply something that's personal with lots of thoughts and emotions about it, you're simply asking here in this process, this is the best summary, what do I need to own? And that alone can powerfully restore you. The great thing about this process is you can do it on yourself anytime. You can also do it with somebody else anchoring you. So in your instructions, I actually have two pieces here. I have the process with you anchoring yourself and the process of a partner anchoring you. So I'm going to make my way through those instructions. And if we have time left, we'll do a demo. And if we don't, that might be actually okay too. You can be better prepared for the next call, and we will definitely tackle one of the things that's on your list of preparation, and I'll do that as a demo. Okay, so the process with you anchoring yourself is, to begin, step one, you're going to state simply, without validating, without justifying, I hurt, or you can find a different word for hurt. It might be harmed, emasculated, diminished, crushed, betrayed, etc. So I hurt, harmed, etc. And then you're going to fill in the blank of the name of the person that you hurt or harmed or etc. And that might be yourself. So you might just simply say, I hurt myself. And then that finishes off with the words when or by blank. And again, this can be vague. I hurt myself when I didn't honor my promise to myself. I hurt myself when I didn't go to bed on time. I emasculated Dave when I criticized him in how he was cooking. So you just say without validating or justifying, this is what happened. I hurt or harmed. Again, this is going to perhaps fly in the face of some of the holy, true, valued things that we've explored within Breakthrough Mindscape, Free Fall, Body Talk, Underlying Philosophy. And yet, this is one of those things that still just somehow really works, and it works really well. So know that we don't actually mean that, yes, this is indeed exactly what happened. This is simply the voicing of the blame. So if we look at it from the perspective of, well, like the ogre's Shrek says, it's better out than in. He's the wisest ogre I know. It's just literally giving voice to it and getting it out. That alone can be tremendous. It doesn't mean that we're actually believing them that this is exactly what happened. Okay? But from their perception, that's what happens. Okay? So step two is I own that. Step three. Is there anything else about that? And here you're simply trusting whatever shows up. It doesn't have to make sense. And just like you did in the first step, form a sentence. If there's anything else connected to this, you're going to make another sentence, just like we did in step one. And again, you're going to go through to step two. I own that. So you keep repeating steps one and two until you ask, well, steps, pardon me, one, two, and three, until in the third step, you ask yourself, is there anything else about that? And you get a no. Step four. When you've said all that you need to say about that item, you're going to ask yourself, do I release myself? And that's the juicy turning point right there. If the answer is no, then you're going to have to go back and repeat those first three steps. Look again. What else about that? Because there's something else here that's preventing the release. So, what else about that? If in step four, when you ask yourself, do I release myself? And the answer was yes. Then simply stating and doing it out loud is very powerful. Doing it with your eyes in a mirror is even more powerful. So go for gold here. And you're simply saying, I release myself. We do a variation of this in Free Fall 1. So if you are familiar with Free Fall 1, know that this is a just slightly different way of doing it. Okay. Step five is anytime there's a release, there's a natural opportunity and a space opens up to honor a commitment. So step five is, what do I commit to? And even if you don't get anything in particular popping up or bubbling up in that moment, that's okay. Stay with that question for the next few hours or days until the awareness finds you. So now with this new space that's opened up, what do I commit to? Not what can I commit to? The keyword, what do I commit to? Okay, step six is critical. When you're complete, celebrate. High five yourself. Hug yourself. Anytime you celebrate that your self-awareness has gone through the rigors and come out the other side, it creates the space to have even more unfold. And it might happen without you having to do anything consciously. So you might not have to go through any set of steps or use any particular tool. When we celebrate the doing of the shadow work, it also rewires and takes the shame out of doing this work, which is often there on a subconscious level. We often associate shadow work with shame. If we were to do this whole process with somebody else anchoring us, that can also be a really powerful way to do it. And you can even just teach somebody how to do this. You can do this with each other, set up a trade on the Facebook group. It's very similar, so I'll go a little faster this time. So step one is the same. You always start by, I hurt, harmed, etc., the name or yourself, when or by, fill in the blank. Then step two, the partner will actually say, thank you for owning that. Step three, the partner will then ask, is there anything else about that? So they'll prompt you and trust whatever shows up. Doesn't have to make sense. If there's something else that shows up, form a sentence and keep repeating those first three steps again. When there's nothing else about that, step four, the partner will ask, do you forgive yourself? Oh shit, didn't edit that one appropriately. Haha. Do you release yourself? I'll change that on our notes on our handout. Do you release yourself? And if the answer is no, then the partner will prompt, okay, what else about that? And they'll cycle you through those steps all over again until in step four, the partner says, do you release yourself? And the answer is yes. And the partner may prompt you, or you just may automatically say, I release myself. Or you might say a variation of that, and it might be, I release myself for, fill in the blank. Then, step five. The partner will most likely say something like, well, thank you. What do you commit to? Is their next piece. And again, it's okay if nothing finds you instantaneously. Just sit with it for a little while. Let it find you. And then again, that most critical, important step, six, when you're complete, high five, celebrate the shit out of that. Your partner may even thank you or congratulate you, receive that. So anytime we celebrate our self-awareness, it creates that space for more to unfold. And again, that might not be consciously, it might be subconsciously, within your dream space. You can heal while you're dreaming overnight. So the more we celebrate the space in which we have done what it is we're looking to do, the more that it can continue to arrive there naturally all on your own, because the body will embrace that with tremendous joy. And it'll start to get wired as this is something that provides relief. This is something that's also perhaps pleasant to do and might even provide me with more pleasure and more opportunity to live more fully. Okay. All right, my love, so that's the process. So really go to town with this one. If there's anything left that you need to explore in this mentorship experience, this is the time. This is really important. Leave no stone unturned. So prep for this. As mentioned, there's a few questions that go with that prep. You can go through that list of questions, making your list of items that you'd like to address, that you'd like to release. Then, you're more than welcome, before I even do a demo, to just simply play with this. You can anchor yourself. You can have another person anchor you. Maybe there's a friend. Maybe there's a partner in your romantic life. Maybe there's a work buddy that you know really well. Or maybe it's with each other. Ask for trades with each other. Nancy, you already did that. High five for you. Gold star. Celebrate the shit out of that. Woohoo. Yay. And you can continue to explore this in whatever way feels right for you. And then that might actually make more sense to revisit this next time we get together. And we'll either clarify any questions that have come up with the process, or we'll just dive into doing a demo, and then we'll get to everything that we need to get to with the rest of our last call. I can't believe how fast this has gone. My gosh. Okay, so I'm going to sign off for now because I promised that these calls would not go longer than 75 minutes, and we're pushing that boundary real fast. And wish you all a most fabulous evening. To help integrate this, feel free to tap out your cortices. Think of that as like your immediate homework. And then playing with this process as much or as little as you like in whatever way feels most right for you. Okay. So I'll let you enjoy your homework. Feel free to check in and ask questions in the meantime. You don't have to wait for 2 weeks to pass. So use our Facebook group, email me privately, Facebook Messenger me privately, text me privately, do whatever you like to do with all that. Okay, my loves, I'm going to wish you a fabulous evening or morning, depending upon what time of day you're listening to this. Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.